Now, if I were a movie producer, I would love this scene in the gospel. It's dramatic. It's got everything you need. It's got movement. It's got crowds. It's got violence. It's got everything that makes something really popular in modern cinema. This passage is one of the most vibrant in all of the Gospels. In part because we have a tendency to see this Jesus of ours as sort of a gentle soul with long flowing locks and always gathering the children to him and always moving out and having a kind word for everybody, healing the sick, doing all these nice and wonderful things. It violates our sensitivity to see Jesus get really, really angry. To see Jesus get so angry that he would make a whip of cords and start threatening people with it, if not hitting them with it. That's not our Jesus. Oh, no, no, no. That's not the God of the New Testament. The God of the New Testament is a God of love. But then we don't understand what love really is. We mistake love for kindness or sweetness. And while love can be sweet and kind, it isn't the totality of what love is about. And so we see this scene. In order to get a good sense of it, think of yourselves at a very popular open-air market where there's a big crowd of people and there are tables everywhere with people selling their wares, everything from fresh organic eggs to trinkets to sausages, you name it, it's there. Baked goods, it's all there. And everybody's milling around and looking in their pockets and their purses for their change and their money, and there's a lot of exchanging going on. All of that dynamism, all of that energy, all of that activity, this is what Jesus walks into the temple precincts and he sees it. Into this marvelous temple. It's a big one. This is the great temple of Herod. It's the second temple on Temple Mount, the first one having been destroyed. And Herod rebuilds it as a great public works project. And it's bigger and better and more beautiful than ever. And in the outer courtyard is this market going on. Now, we might get really upset and say, well, they shouldn't be doing that in God's temple. They started doing that in a narthex. Well, it's a little crowded in there, but if they started doing it in there, we'd get upset with them. You know, take it outside, do something else. No, actually, these people needed to be there. The money changers and the people that brought the cows and the goats and the sheep and the doves, they needed to be there because, you see, from the earliest time of God's people, sacrifice was a part of their religious observance. And all through the beginning of Holy Scripture, in those first five books we call the Torah, the law, there are several different kinds of sacrifices that are prescribed for certain events in life. We all remember that, even in that wonderful story. If you go back into another gospel and look at the lessons there. We even have a picture of it on one of our stained glass windows. It's called the Presentation in the Temple. Jesus on the eighth day is brought to the temple, and Joseph and Mary offer two turtle doves to ransom their firstborn. Because in the law of God, the firstborn was consecrated to the Lord. And if you wanted not to leave him or her at the temple, you had to offer a redemptive sacrifice. Now, to make it easy for people, because everybody had to do this, then the sacrifice was minimal. It was two turtle doves. But from the beginning also, the sacrifice that was demanded had to be pure. It had to be the best. We all know the story of Cain and Abel. You know, Abel was the one who gave his best and his first fruits to God and sacrificed them to the Lord. Cain did something else. He kind of said, well, this stuff I'm not going to use. It's not going to bring me much money, so I'll sacrifice that to God. And we all know how that story turned out. No, from the very beginning, the history of God's people, The sacrifice had to be pure, unblemished. It had to be the first of anything. Also, you know, you had to do it in Jerusalem. So if you were resident in some place, this God-forsaken place like in Galilee, up in Nazareth, in order to get to the temple, you had to cart all this stuff with you, which was most inconvenient. And in fact, was very, very difficult, especially if you had to give a big sacrifice, like a goat, or a sheep, or even a heifer. So, the marketplace developed outside the temple, in the temple precincts, in the outer courtyard. The marketplace was supposed to be there. It was actually there as a service to God's people, to facilitate their religious observance, to help them fulfill the demands of the law. And not only that, the religious law, all the way back to the time of Moses, declared that, after all, you cannot worship the Lord your God with anything that is foreign. So if you had Greek or Roman money in your pocket, you had to change it for money of the realm in Palestine. It had to have Hebrew money. You couldn't give a denarii, you had to give a shekel. And so the money changers, again, they were there for a very positive and a very helpful reason. So it can't be their being present in the temple that angers Jesus so deeply. That means we have to unfold this a little bit, look a little bit deeper. And I think we find it very quickly. Because, like so many other times that Jesus gets a little sharp with his words, gets a little angry, something gets under his skin, it's usually because somebody is taking advantage of somebody else. That they're using the religious practice and the religious observance of others to further their own cause, to fill their own purses and pockets, or raise themselves up in the estimation of others. Jesus is getting upset, not that these things are happening. What he's getting upset about is the attitude that underlies what is happening. Because in the time of Jesus, if you arrived in the temple precincts and you went to buy your sacrifice, putting it in modern terminology, if a turtle dove cost you a dollar, the merchants there would charge you five. If a goat was necessary and it was supposed to cost you $10, the merchant there would charge you probably 50. So they weren't there simply to facilitate and help the others that came. They were there to line their own pockets. They were there to put themselves first. They were there to take advantage of others, especially the poor. Especially the poor. And that's what got under Jesus' skin. He walks into the temple and he sees all of this going on. Maybe that kind of bothers him a little bit, that there's so much hubbub going on in such a sacred place. But it's a market center. The temple is the center of Jerusalem. So that kind of hubbub is going to happen whether it's a marketplace or not. What he's mad about is that it's about being a market, not about being a place of holiness, not about being a place of prayer and of spiritual growth. And so he walks in and he says, "Get out of here, you people. You don't understand what's supposed to be happening here." He gets angry like that. And so, what is it that Jesus really wants? I think the answer is clear to us. To follow the law of God. Not to take advantage of it, but to live it. We heard the exhortation. We heard the commandments. We recited them in our penitential order. And then we heard him proclaimed in the Word of God from the book of Exodus. How many times do we have to hear it? There they are, the Ten Commandments. How sacred are they to us? You know, our society, some people in our society think they're very, very important. So important that they want to etch them in stone or put them up on the walls of our courthouses. They want to put them in our public parks. And there's a big consternation, a lot of fighting over this. But I dare say to you that they're really not concerned about what the Ten Commandments are saying. They're pretty much like the people in the marketplace of the temple. They're using the ways of God for their own purposes, to make their point in society, to take their power from those commandments. Because you can distill all of those commandments down to two. Jesus already instructed us that way. What is the greatest commandment? He is asked. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And the second is like unto it, he says. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And then we add in our service, on these two commands hang all the law and the prophets. So we can take all of the Ten Commandments, and if you study them carefully, you realize the first bit is about love of God with all our heart and soul and mind and strength. And the others are about loving and respecting one another. Jesus says that they're not two separate commandments. In fact, he says the second is like unto it. What does that mean? It doesn't mean, well, it's kind of in the same place or something. He's saying it's the same thing. So that if you truly say that you love God with all your heart, your soul, and your strength, you will love your neighbor as yourself. It's the natural outgrowth of our love of God. That's what Jesus is saying. And so he's looking at this observance in the temple, and he's saying, these people don't get it. They don't understand, so get out. Take your doves with you. Get out. Leave the money behind. It belongs to the poor. Get out. Don't make my father's house, in another translation, probably better, it says, a den of thieves. So what is really going on here is Jesus is asking us, if we claim to love God and one another, to look at our motivations. What moves us to do the things that we do in our worship, in our outreach, in all the things we claim to be doing as religious folk, as well-meaning disciples of Jesus? What is our ultimate motivation? And if it is not love, then our hearts are in the wrong place. That's the simple teaching that's in all of this. If we claim to love God above all else, but have not love for our neighbor, St. John in his letter says, we are nothing but liars. Wow, strong language there. Jesus, in the Last Supper, on the night he was betrayed, said to us, there is but one command that I give you. Love one another as I have loved you. In doing that, we are loving God. In loving God, we are doing that. The two things are inextricably bound one to another. And the minute we start separating them, somehow we lose our bearings. We may be outwardly religious, but inwardly, as Jesus says in Matthew's gospel, we are but whited sepulchres. Nice and pretty on the outside, but pretty stinky within. Brothers and sisters, we hear this story being told, and we can imagine this in a film. We can imagine how wonderful this would be and how popular it would be. until that question is asked, why do you think Jesus is doing this? And what does it mean to you? What does it mean for you? And that's the question he asks us, you and I, today. Where is our heart? Is it in the right place? When we profess our love for God and our love for neighbor, is it because we are sincere and authentic in our pledge? Or is it because outwardly it makes us feel good about ourselves, makes others feel good about us, and even along the way, it may bring us some profit? Even if we're doing it because we desire heaven, that's a transaction. Love God and love your neighbor so that you can get in. That's buying an admissions ticket. That's not what this is about. It's about aligning our minds and hearts so completely with that of Christ. And in aligning our minds and hearts with Christ, we are fulfilling the very commands of God that were given to us from the very beginning of time. In doing that, we will be authentic and people of integrity. In doing that, we truly will love God with all our heart and soul and mind, and we will love one another authentically and deeply, even as Jesus loved, to give up even his own life, so that we might live.